As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
In by Van der Vaart. On by Cabal! 2-0 down, 3-2 up, Spurs at Arsenal.
Hello and welcome everybody to The View from the Lane once again, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly, I'm joined by The Athletic's James Moore and Jack Pitt-Brook for our preview of the North London Derby, which is why my voice has gone up half an octave and why I'm speaking even more quickly than usual. It's a sign of oncoming hysteria. I'll shake my hands and get the blood flowing to the extremities again. Why don't we start? Since James, you particularly, and me occasionally get accused of being negative about Spurs, why don't we start with a glorious positive memory of the one time Spurs have won in the Premier League, in the North London Derby, at the Emirates. Were you there in 2010 for the famous 3-2?
I've been to the Emirates to watch Spurs twice and they've drawn both times.
Uh-huh. So you're a good, that's good. That's pretty good.
So it's not terrible. And unfortunately, I won't be there on Saturday lunchtime. Yeah, that game was pretty incredible, really. For the only time Spurs have won at the Emirates to be this mad game where they go 2-0 down at halftime and then completely turn it on its head in the second half. I mean, I suppose that's the way you'd want to do it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. If you could choose your path to victory. I mean, I remember I was there working for TalkSport, and at halftime we were doing the Spurs were a couple of goals down, hadn't really turned up at all. And Harry had just taken over, hadn't he, Redknapp? What a terrible job Harry's got here. They're a million miles off here. This Arsenal team are just showing them what they've got to do. But the fact was that Spurs team had lots of talent in it. I'm not, with all due respect, and I'm sure he's a regular listener, to Alan Hutton. Aaron Lennon was a good player. Luka Modric was, you know, bordering on genius at various times. Van der Vaart was a good player. Bale was a good player. And I wonder whether it's a lesson for Antonio Conte that the turning point for me in the game was when he replaced Aaron Lennon, God bless him, with Jermaine Defoe and started to play two up front. Spurs, it was pure Redknapp. The response to going two down was to get more aggressive, not try and be more defensive, not try and sort out the leakages at the back. He got on the front foot. And they played really, really well.
So that means that I've just got the game up on the internet here. So that means that in the second half, Spurs' midfield would have been Van der Vaart, Genius, Modric, and Bale, with Pavlyuchenko and Defoe up front. That is an amazingly
coward
attacking.
Conte insists on playing two.
Yeah, what an amazingly attacking four-man midfield.
Later on, Harry brought in, I think, Scott Parker, didn't he, to shore it up. But for a while there, Spurs were playing six up front. And how jolly it was too.
Because our Athletic colleague Michael Cox, the tactical doyen that he is, I think I'm right in saying, and I hope I'm not misquoting him, he says that's the best substitution or like the kind of the substitution in the Premier League that's changed the game the most, that Defoe one you just mentioned.
Well, I think it was, to me, as I recall, and I haven't watched the game for some time, it was it just changed the momentum is what people want to say. The shape of the two teams was completely altered by that substitution. And of course, you're right, James, to say it's that if you could only win that way, that's that if you could choose it, that'd be the way to win. But there was even one more juiciness, wasn't there? One more cherry tottering on what was already a magnificently iced cake. When it was 2-2, am I right in thinking that Lauren Koscielny missed her about a yard and that Arsenal could have taken the lead again? I think I am.
That does sound familiar.
Did he head the ball over from underneath the crossbar? Absolutely phenomenal. Before Yunis Karbul, who had threatened to do it 5 minutes earlier on an in-swinging free kick, got, you know, you only need 2% of touch, don't you, to change the direction of the ball, and in it went. All of which, of course, leads us to the big game on Saturday. I don't like that it's an early kickoff. I think that tends to not help the fans at all. And it tends to, I suspect, if you're the away team, though, you'll say, well, okay, good, then they won't have a load of drunk people behind them. Let's just try and get a feel for what kind of teams they'll put out. I guess a lot of that depends, Jack, on Kulishevsky's hamstring injury. And in the press conference, we're recording this just seconds after Antonio Conte finished his press conference, he was unbelievably closed-mouthed about it. Do we know anything about Kulishevsky?
What we know is that Kulusevski returned. He started both games for Sweden over the Nations League campaign. They lost 4-1 to Serbia and then drew 1-1 with Slovenia. He started both of those. Came back feeling a bit of a kind of minor hamstring issue. This has been scanned and it's being monitored at Tottenham. But the feeling I think is that he is unlikely to play this Saturday. I don't know how serious it is beyond that. I know at the press conference this afternoon, which I wasn't at, but Tim was at, just judging by what Conte said, he didn't want to say anything about Kulusevski, but I think when asked about it, but he was also asked about the formation, potential formation. I think he did admit that, you know, Kulusevski might have a problem going into this game. So I would certainly recommend people taking them out of their fantasy teams.
Well, we'll come on to that press conference in just a second. I should say that Kulusevski's had quite an adventure in his international break. After that whacking they got from Serbia and Mitrovic, he went on Swedish television to complain bitterly about the way football is organised in Sweden and pointed out that countries with similar sized populations and financial arrangements, talked about Serbia, Belgium, Denmark, had all started 8 to 10 years ago with deep down coaching reforms, which had turned their national teams into really good teams. He said Sweden had done no such thing, and he got a tremendous reprimand from the Swedish manager, who said it's none of his business. His job is to play the game. But
what a ridiculous attitude to tell Kulusevski it's not his business. Of course it's his business. He's Sweden's best footballer.
He's in the team, absolutely, yeah. Along with Isak.
If it's not his business,
he'll be expected to carry that team for the next decade, won't he?
Yeah.
Unlike, say, our Dutch comrades, Swedish people are expected largely to keep in their lane, aren't they? Good social housing, a decent health service, keep in your lane. But there was a row between the two of them after that. They did get a good walloping from Serbia. Well, as we say, Antonio Conte, not necessarily at his most communicative in this afternoon's press conference. We can hear now from Tim Spears, the other part of the award hoovering, I think is the correct phrase, View from the Lane podcast, who gives us this update from the press conference this afternoon.
View from the Lane listeners, hello. Danny, Jack, James, hope you're well. I am out of Antonio Conte's pre-Arsenal press conference, just sat here in my car in the sunshine at the beautiful Tottenham Hotspur training ground. And it was quite an interesting press conference. Conte was on good form, a few subjects addressed, injuries doesn't look great, to be honest. He sort of conceded that Kulusevski has an injury but wouldn't go into it, didn't want to rule him in or out for Saturday, but said they do have a few problems that have come out of the international break, but he didn't want to give any advantage to Arsenal by revealing those, which I guess is fair enough. We'll wait and see on Saturday morning with the team news. But he said, yeah, Friday's a big day to see how some of his players bear up after the international break. Obviously, there's quite a lot of them away. He spoke really well on the Richarlison horrific racist abuse incident when he had a banana thrown at him during the international break. And yeah, Conte does seem to speak very well on the stuff that really matters. I remember he did so when talking about the Queen last month. He said it was embarrassing, to be honest. He said it's an incredible thing to have happened in 2022. He hopes the people involved are banned for life. And he's just disappointed and annoyed that he has to even comment about it, to be honest. But trying to take the positives of Richarlison having such a good international break with Brazil. He was also asked about links with the Juventus job. I know Danny was quite worried about this a couple of weeks ago, but he basically said it's disrespectful to talk about it in terms of the Juventus job. It's disrespectful to him to suggest that he might go somewhere else. And he was very sort of positive about his future with Spurs, as he tends to be whenever he's asked about it, really. He's happy, he's enjoying his time. The crucial thing is the relationship with the owners, and that's very good. That was about it, really. The one other thing that came up was someone asked him if he'd watched the Arsenal Amazon documentary. And he said he started watching it, but he hasn't finished. He's watched the Spurs, Man City and Juventus ones. He says he's curious about them and likes to see how different managers work, etc. He says it's a positive that these documentaries happen because people get to see the inside of football. And then it was put to him that he knows exactly how the Arsenal documentary from last season ends, which was banterific, to be honest, and many laughs were had by all in the room. So there you go. Some good news, some indifferent news, some bad news, but the football continues.
Okay, so since he refused to speculate, we can. Go on then, James. Let's accept that Kulusevski is out for this game. Does he play three very attacking forwards and hope they can keep in contact with the team, or does he go to two up front and play a 3-5-2?
I think I'd really like him to go to the 3-5-2, and as we talked about after the Leicester game, obviously that was the change that kind of tipped that game massively in Tottenham's favour. So for me, that's what I would like to happen. Mm-hmm. But as I also think we said after that game, I don't think it's likely that he's going to have this massive wholesale change, even with this injury sort of half forcing his hand a little bit or making it a slightly easier decision to make. So I suspect it'll be 3-4-3 with Son, Kane and Richarlison as the attacking three in the midfield, as we've seen it before. But yeah, if it was up to me, which would be a marvellous world, obviously. Yeah. I would probably get Basuma in the team and Kane and Son up front and try and shore it up a little bit.
I know that Jack says that the stats suggest that he will not do that, but just as a matter of interest, Jack, everyone's been, you know, the 3-5-2. I can see the attraction of it as well. It's what I play traditionally on Football Manager. The problem is,
you play Football Manager?
Oh yeah, I love Football Manager. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, mostly. Let's not mess about here. I play the 2001 version of the game.
Jack really hates you with a Play Football Manager. I think he said this on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. Jack thinks you're a nerd now.
I don't care what Jack thinks about that. To be honest, you know, I would prefer to be in Jack's good books and to be a lifelong chum.
There's no reason anyone should care what I think about anything, to be honest.
No, it's not like...
thanks for listening, everyone. See you later.
It's not like that. I understand that. I think what happens, Jack, is I like the 2001 version of the game before the transfer window comes in Britain, all the rest of it, and you can very quickly and legally buy a patch on eBay which updates to all the modern players. Oh, and cool. Then I don't play it for 18 months at all, and then I play it again, and I play it incessantly for 6 weeks, then I get bored with it. But I will tell you this. How I learned to play Football Manager back in the day... My brother, bless him, was having a sort of relationship breakdown. They hated what was happening to him in his flat. I said, forget all that. Move out. Come and live with me. I had a big house in Islington, 5-story house, if you include the basement. And it had a spiral staircase all the way up the middle of it. And he said to me, oh, there's a great game now called Football Manager. You'd like it. And of course, and I thought my brother is a football nerd. I thought, oh, would I really like it? Anyway, he taught me to play it and we got into it. But we were too mean to buy a second disc. And so he was living and playing with his computer at the very top of the house, and I was in my office at the very bottom of the house. And we would text each other, not even shout up, text each other, and down through the spiral staircase on a string with a safety pin on the bottom of it would come the disc. We'd pass the disc up and down the house on a small lift we'd operate at the time. Pure laziness.
I mean, look... I would say if you live in a 5-story house in Islington with a spiral staircase, mm-hmm. You can probably like stump up 30 quid to get another copy of
and
that.
And that's
game.
Exactly how I got to be in that house, by not being as a spendthrift as that. We could have afforded a butler to take the blinking thing up and down a silver salver. but that's not how you get to have the townhouse in Islington, is it? By throwing money about.
If you can let us know how you did get that, that would be great.
My views on football. What more can I tell you? So what are the stats, Jack? He just doesn't go away from his 3-4-3 now.
Well, the last time I believe he didn't play 3-4-3 was the famous use of one-off 4-4-2, which lost Tottenham the game at Stamford Bridge on the 23rd of January. So that's 8 months ago. I think that's...
But that's when he was going through his nervous breakdown about Chelsea, wasn't it?
I thought it was 20 games in the spin. I've actually screwed that up. It's actually a lot more than 20.
Yeah,
it's probably
more
in the region of 30-plus games since Tottenham played a different formation. But it turns out that there's a huge gap in my note-taking on this.
And do we need to do some live subbing of the piece? So Jack has failed a piece about...
Oh, yeah, that actually has just jeopardised the story I've written on exactly this point.
It's going to be published at 4:30 on Thursday afternoon. So by the time people are listening to the podcast, that'll be out there.
Listener,
you could have this factual error.
Listeners can see how useless I am.
If football cliches' very own Adam Hurry doesn't correct the mistake. So if our listeners see that error in that piece...
Give me a sec.
You'll know that football cliches' Adam Hurry has not adequately subbed that article.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
This is
8,
the stuff.
9,
this is the end. 10,
all of this left in the
12,
podcast.
12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17.
Thank God, this is free.
18, 19, 20.
Premium tea, content.
But it doesn't stop at 20, though, does it?
No, there's many more.
21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. 29. 29 games in the spin, not 20. Should I quickly slack Adam Hurry and tell him?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
What a podcast this is.
I know. So if there's an injury up front or he wants to change it, who's going to come on?
Yeah, it's nice to have the idea of Richarlison being on, and this isn't a criticism of Richarlison at all, but the idea of having Richarlison on the bench as the plan B.
Very lucky,
is really nice, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very comforting.
The idea that it could be a tight game, you know, 0-0 with half an hour to play, and then you chuck on Richarlison.
Well, for two reasons. Because one, he's a good player, and two, he's a very disruptive player, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Because he turns up in odd places and sometimes does some very odd things. Then my issue is that, Jack, that the other problem with the idea of playing five is that the three are quite similar. Who is the person who's going to pass the ball for Spurs out those three midfielders? Is it Bissouma running with the ball, or is it Højbjerg's occasionally inspired pass?
I don't know. I don't know what the balance would be. I don't even know if it would definitely be Bissouma and not
Skip, couldn't it? Yeah.
I don't think that Bissouma has... I mean, look, it's kind of obvious that Bissouma hasn't made a great impression so far since he joined Tottenham. Conte took the slightly unusual step of talking explicitly recently, saying that Bissouma still needs to learn in, I think, what he called the tactical aspect. He loves Skip. Skip obviously has come back and played under 21s. His first game actually since Tottenham of this long run of playing 3-4-3, which starts at the same time. So I don't know. I think it could just as likely be Skip as Bissouma. I just think it's just not. I don't think it's what Conte wants to do. Although maybe he'll end up compromising just because of the specifics of this game.
It does feel like it would be chucking one or other of those two in at a deep end. And I know, you know, they've both played plenty of Premier League games, maybe not quite in Skip's case, but they've played a lot of Premier League games between them previously. The idea of coming in from the cold, you know, Skip having been injured for 7-8 months, Bissouma having not yet started, only started one Premier League game this season and it not really going particularly well for him. The idea that you chuck one or other of those two in against a team top of the league, we know broadly how they're going to be up for that game. I mean, I think we all have a fairly good idea of the way Arsenal are going to approach that from the off. It's going to be an intense game. The idea of chucking one or other of those in, I guess, then it maybe wouldn't be particularly appealing to Conte.
Although he does have, he will be. Yes, I agree with you.
You know, this is exactly the kind of thing Charlie would remember, but the listener should forget about Charlie for 6 months now. He's gone. This is exactly the kind of thing Charlie would remember, though, and Tim would never know. You know, when Conte won the league with Chelsea in 16-17, there was that game where he changed the system. He changed to a back three after like three or four games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was it a game against Arsenal?
It was.
Or after a game against Arsenal?
Oh. It's at Arsenal. It was during the game at the Emirates, I think. Mid-game. They started.
They were getting Spurs are getting battered anymore.
Spurs are getting battered, then he changes to 3-5-2 and then he sticks with that for the rest of the season and we win the league.
That'd be amazing.
Well, we'd settle for that.
I would take that.
Yeah.
I would take it. Yeah. I would be willing to concede that game for Spurs to win the league. That's how humble I am.
And everyone notes your modesty the entire time.
Do you think if like looking down the line at, you know, a potential future in which Spurs play 3-5-2, do you think it could be Kulusevski could end up playing as a 10, as in is one of the midfield
absolutely
three?
And I think that's what he wants to do as well. The drifting in, although it does, it takes away that it cut inside to the left-hand corner of the box, and then that's their defensive left-hand corner, yeah. And his left-footed curler, which of course it turns out Son is even better at, around the goalkeeper. But I think if of the players who are currently at the club, the only one who's equipped to play 10, other than Kane, is Kulusevski, yeah?
Yeah. Brian Gill. This is Brian Gill erasure.
Imagine Hill starting against Arsenal. Why not? Chuck him in.
Brian Hill is the new Ndombele for you, isn't he? You're going to just keep on scratching that itch for us, aren't you?
I need some new like bits this season.
Do you follow him on Instagram, Jack, Brian Hill?
I assume so.
I know I've talked about his Instagram stories before and his famous trips to Westminster Bridge, but over the international break, he posted loads of clips of him playing for Spain under 21s, like with flame emojis and stuff. But they weren't like, I don't want to be unfair, but they weren't like amazing bits of skill or like key passes in moves that led to goals. They were just sort of like 6 out of 10 sideways passes, step over, passing back to the full
flame,
back
flame.
Nothing like hugely impressive.
Fire, fire.
Yeah, flames. Brian Hill is on flames. Pass completion.
Who is the best? I mean. Who is the best current Tottenham player on Instagram?
Great question.
I haven't got a clue.
I don't really know. They're all kind of. Richarlison's funny on social media.
Yeah, it's not bad, Richarlison. If I think with someone like that, if it's really him, I really like it. And if it's not him, it's like, you know, it's fine. But if it's actually him doing it, it's amazing.
Yeah,
it kind of feels like one of those where if it's actually him and it's really him, his personality and it's personal, it's really good. And
the chances of it being him are actually quite low, I think, sadly.
I would say so. More or less every Brazilian footballer hires like 15 different people from their childhood to do all this sort of stuff.
You two have both got blue ticks on Twitter. Are they your actual tweets? Or do you have flunkies who do that for you?
No.
Why do we both pause then? Like the answer.
Because I was trying to make up a funny joke.
I was trying to come up with a funny joke. I don't have anything funny to say as usual. So no, all my tweets are mine. Sadly.
Now, James,
I take full responsibility.
To see who has posted good stuff on Instagram recently, and there's nothing really from any of the Spurs players.
Can I use this Instagram tangent to plug my work-related Instagram account, which is Jack Pitbrook Athletic? James got his head in his hands here, but
because you have so much personality that you feel like you need two Instagram accounts.
I do need two Instagram accounts. Laurie Whitwell's got two Instagram accounts. So yeah, if you're on Instagram and want to see pictures of football grounds I've been to and other football journalists, and that's it really, you can
of Jack and Miguel Delaney.
Hold the bus.
Jack Pitbrook Athletic.
Who's on? What's on your other Instagram account then?
Jack's personal Instagram account, and I know a lot of the listeners will follow this as well. Jack's personal Instagram account is entirely him taking photographs of his TV, watching like Sopranos or Succession.
There's a lot of that. So my personal Instagram account, yeah, it's got a lot of what I'm watching on TV. It's also pictures of like gigs and my wife and me in the pub, and that's it really.
Okay, I begin to see the separation of church and state here. Listen, thank you very much indeed. We might return to Jack's various media platforms on another day when the podcast is even more slow.
Fortunately, there's nothing to talk about. So,
Emerson Royale for right back against Arsenal.
I don't hate it.
He was at fault for one of the goals, but he actually played. He looked upside. He looked really fit, slightly even more lean than usual. And with a better beard than usual. Downside, he was at fault for a goal, but it was good to see him just running around, to be truthful. And Jed Spence played for the under-21s as well.
Yeah, it sounded like Spence played really well, actually, against Italy for the under-21s. Against Destiny
Udogi,
I believe, yeah. I'm not really against Royale playing in this game, actually. It kind of feels like a game that befits having the best defender of the right wing backs, probably. I think that's what we'd say he was. I think that's
up,
okay.
Up against Martinelli.
Yeah, actually, I think that would be quite shrewd. I mean, you say that like it isn't just what he would do anyway. But I mean, I think it probably was the right choice in this instance.
Yeah, because they, you know, we're going to get a flavour of how to beat Arsenal a little later from the one team who have beaten them. Manchester United, of course, did defeat them. We'll be hearing from the Athletic's Manchester United man, Carl Anker, a little later on how they achieved that. But we have to bear in mind, Arsenal are somewhere between a good and a blinking good team just now. And whoever Spurs line out in their nine-man defence, they're going to have to deal with Odegaard, who is running games from midfield, with Martinelli, who is fulfilling the promise people saw in him, and Gabriel Jesus, who, in a slightly different system than Manchester City's, is proving to be a far more creative player, as well as a good finisher, than he was perhaps at Manchester City. I don't want to build Arsenal up too much here, because, you know, the best way for Spurs to win this game is to think about themselves and get after it, and to start well. Please don't sit there on the edge of the box for the first 20 minutes trying to, you know, take the crowd out of the game or anything like that, Spurs. For God's sake, get on the front foot. And as I always say...
That is exactly what they're going to do, though.
Oh, I know exactly what they're going to do, yes.
Also, you can't take the crowd out of the game in a game like this by doing that. Like,
you're encouraging them, if anything.
Yeah. If Spurs are 10% possession in the first 15 minutes of the game and are camped in their own penalty area constantly, and Romero is having to keep... and Dier are having to make, like, these mad blocks, they're going to be bang up for it.
Yeah, and they'll also
take
be
take the thing out of it, get a ball, knock it around, be really boring.
And they'll be
trying to score a goal.
Doing the new thing that football fans do now, where they try not to influence the referee, but to influence the VAR people to review every time the ball strikes somebody in the penalty area, even if it's clearly on their shin. The crowd goes mad, and the hope of the hubbub will alert the snoozing figure in Stockley Park, if it is still Stockley Park, to wake up and find a reason to give a penalty. And my idealism of risking the game of losing it to in order to enhance the possibility of winning 3-2, Antonio and I could sit together in some lovely wine bar in Tuscany for a million years, and we're never going to see eye to eye about that, ever, ever, ever. All right, we'll come back to how to beat Arsenal in the second half. We'll also discuss, I think, set pieces and what a big part they've played, according to the experts at The Athletic, in Spurs' season so far. We'll also be bringing you, I think, a brilliant update of last podcast, when we're talking about sampling managers after Jose Mourinho turned up in the new Stormzy song and video. None of you answered the question we asked correctly, but they did. We have been overwhelmed with places where football managers and popular music intersect, and we're going to talk about those in a few minutes' time here on The View from the Lane. And I will also be bringing all of that together with the greatest sampled record that reflects the North London Derby. All of that is coming up in the next few minutes in the second half of The View from the Lane, where you'll listen to me, Danny Kelly, Jack Pitbrook and James Moore.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got
59% win ratio is second to none.
Yeah, welcome back to The View from the Lane. I'm Danny Kelly. James Moore and Jack Pitbrook are with me as well. And I have to say this, we've had a brief interlude while you've been hearing messages and things. And boy, oh boy, that stuff's all been recorded. That will be coming out in a Christmas special that will lay waste all other podcasts. Look out for it. It's really going to be good. And one almost 100% libelous, so you'll enjoy that too. Listen, on Monday on the show, we pleaded with our wonderful listeners, downloaders and subscribers to help finding other managers who'd been sampled in music, like Jose Mourinho had been done by Stormzy. You'll see that in his new video as well. Well, a lot of you replied. I mean, none of it, to be honest, was exactly spot on what we wanted, but there was a lot of links between popular music and football managers. We were reminded first by Ali, a.k.a. DJ Giller, who said, listen, Stormzy has form for this kind of thing, and remind us of a clip from the song Know Me from. David Moyes doesn't actually appear, but a bloke wearing David Moyes' mask does. So thanks to DJ Giller for that. Sam Limes said, give him a ball and a yard of grass by the Sultans of Ping. A band about whom I'd forgotten, I think, completely, is based on Brian Clough's quotes about his former Scottish left winger, John Robertson. And you know what? It is.
Give him a ball and a yard of grass. He'll give you a move with a perfect pass. Give him a ball and a yard of spice. He'll give you a move with godly grace.
Where's my jumper? A classic.
That's right. The Sultans of Ping.
Is it on the same record, or is it B-side to the? That's.
Now you're testing my old noggin there. What Jack is referring to there is that the Sultans of Ping, or the Sultans of Ping FC, as they were briefly called.
Sultans of Ping FC, yeah.
They did have a great song called Where's My Jumper? I'm trying to think, it was they that caused the famous DJ Steve Lamack, these days of Radio 6 fame, to break his instep on my desk. Was it? No, it was. We put the Sultans of Ping on the cover of the NME when I was editor. Steve comes in, because it was his idea, flush with success 2 weeks later, and there was another Irish band, even more obscured, he wants to put on the cover. When I talked to the rest of the staff out of it, he kicked my desk so hard that he had to be hospitalised with a broken instep. Not a toe or a metatarsal. His actual instep had cracked. Fool.
Cultured footballer, clearly.
Fool. He's a Colchester fan.
So I just looked up on Spotify, which I hope is correct. Where's My Jumper and Give Him a Ball and a Yard of Grass were on the... They're not on the same single. They're on the same album. Casual Sex and Cineplex, which came out in 1993. Mm-hmm. One of the Sultans of Ping FC, I'm not sure which one, actually went on, I think, to become either a historian or a philosopher, because he taught quite a lot of my friends at university.
Wow, that is a brilliant career handbrake turn as well, isn't it? Fantastic. And later on we'll hear about somebody else who's gone from making low-key, perhaps, indie music, some of it referring to the North London Derby, to going on to being a huge bigwig, of whom I'm pretty sure, I don't know about James's musical proclivities, pretty sure Jack's all across his works, and we'll come on to that a little bit later. Next up was Aaron Rawdin, who said, my first thought for a manager quote to be sampled was Gennaro Gattuso's famous, sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit line. It seems ripe for sampling. Very good indeed. And finally, for now, at Pugtastrophe on Twitter, that's at Pugtastrophe, wrote, I'm amazed Danny never mentioned the reference. It has to be a negative about somebody, doesn't it, James? I don't understand that.
Yeah,
he says he was amazed that Danny never mentioned the reference to arguably the greatest manager of all time, Matt Busby, mentioned by the greatest band of all time, the Beatles. Yet we weren't talking about mentions, we were talking about samples. Of course, Sir Matt Busby, along with B.B. King and one or two other great people, is mentioned in Dig It by the Beatles on their Let It Be album.
Doris Day. Matt Busby. Dig it. Dig it.
Okay, I've been on tenterhooks since we started doing this piece because I suddenly remembered, of course, that there is a great record which does sampling of actual football voices and which is very pertinent to the North London Derby. Cast your mind back a long time. So these two are still wearing diapers, as people now call nappies. The 1991 FA Cup semi-final when Spurs beat Arsenal. Paul Gascoigne's free kick from miles out, which David Seaman kind of fumbled on its way into the net or didn't make a very good attempt to get at. The following day, the members, Jack, of two famous indie bands, the Cocteau Twins and Lush, who, of course, Mickey Berenyi, their female star. She's got a brilliant new autobiography out this very, very week. I recommend it to you if you're interested in music from that period of time. They got together the next day and under the name of the Lilies, the Lily Whites, because they were supporters of the Spurs, various members of the two bands, they put together a brilliant flexi disc, which is somewhere in the back of my barn, called And David Seaman Will Be Disappointed With That.
Mavis, fed it well. Naeem to the left. Samways ahead. And Lineker uses him by not using him. Good try, score! And David Seaman will be very disappointed about that. It seemed to go through his fingers. Good break by Tottenham.
And there you have it. What about that? You've not heard that before, Jack.
No, I had no idea Cocteau Twins were into football.
Well, actually, it's
to me.
It's only Simon Raymonde, and where we talked about your friend from the Sultans of Ping, who had become a philosopher. Simon, of course, has gone on from being a football-supporting member of an indie band to running what it may not be. Is it the best or the most successful record company in the world, Bella Union? What do you think, Jack?
Oh, wow. I had no idea. That's incredible.
Simon runs. Beach House, who I think we both love. I think that's fair to say, yeah. Father John Misty, Jonathan Wilson, Midlake, Spiritualized, Flaming Lips. And on and on and on and on and on is run by Simon Raymonde, who is a massive Spurs fan. Also,
of course, on the show.
I'll see what I can do about
Simon,
that.
Simon, if you're listening.
And Ivor Raymonde, his father, was Dusty Springfield's producer. Do I have to go on? We're just knitting the world together here, ladies and gentlemen. What appeared to you to be a fog of nothingness is now being knit into a kind of bunker of knowledge.
Are there any other shoegaze Spurs fans? Did My Bloody Valentine support Spurs?
I have spoken to Kevin on many occasions. He doesn't appear to know much about anything other than music, if I'm absolutely frank with you. Let me think. Other shoegaze Spurs fans. I'll come back to that one.
One for our Twitter listeners to chip
and
in
for
on.
For the Christmas special, where we're playing the interludes, which we don't record or put out on the podcast, which are both very sweary and tremendously libelous. Look forward to that, everybody. $9.99 it'll be, like boxing on Sky. Let's go back to the game and let's hear about the one team who have actually managed to defeat Arsenal so far this season. Because let's be fair, and we have to say this, Arsenal are good. So how can Spurs overcome them? Manchester United, as I say, are the only team who have done that so far. So we asked Carl Anker from the Athletic's Talk of the Devils podcast. It's good, but it's not that good, is it? For some friendly advice. They hate Arsenal, Manchester United. We just have to live alongside them. This is what Carl had to say.
Right, first important caveat. This Arsenal team is legit. This is the best I've seen Arsenal play for quite some time. But I think if you want to beat Arsenal, what you need to do is essentially lure them onto you. So the first goal Manchester United score comes about through Christian Eriksen's very clever play, passing not only forwards but also backwards, basically getting Arsenal to progress slightly further up and press Manchester United further, and then quickly passing through the lines, getting into the final third. I think from the outside looking in, Antonio Conte's team is quite interesting in that they don't necessarily press from the front and are very good at creating those transitional moments. The big question is, are Højbjerg and Bentancur capable of passing into that final third quickly in the same way that Christian Eriksen is? I would suggest not, but I think if you want to beat Arsenal, now the big way to stop them or to score goals is in them quick transitional moments.
Carl Anker there just giving us a taster of how Manchester United beat Arsenal. But to me, James, the issue here is it's not going to be this tactical masterclass between Arteta and Conte, or this tactical battle between Arteta and Conte. If the Spurs players are in the game, then, you know, the good London derbies, the good Spurs-Arsenal derbies, the good North London derbies over the years have been the ones where the managers have lost control of it. And the players have kind of taken over and said, right, we're going for this now, reacting to the crowd and the atmosphere.
Define good. Do you mean in terms of like entertainment for the neutral or Spurs getting a good
result?
They're often
quite cagey games and dull games until something happens. And my fear is that in those games, the home team tends to prevail and Arsenal are also in very good form. I suspect the best of the games have been the ones where a foul or one of the teams going so far behind, a la 2010, that they just have to get up and have a go, have been the better games.
Yeah, I guess I just don't see this game being one of those games where Spurs cede control in that way. Like, obviously it's going to be a really difficult game, but I just don't see Spurs like leaving themselves exposed in a way that would mean they were 2-0 down. Famous last words. I don't even want to say it. Yeah. I'm going to be very diplomatic here. I don't want to curse Spurs, all right? I would say, in general, an Antonio Conte team is more tactically solid than a Harry Redknapp team. God, I get that. So, when Spurs are 2-0 down at halftime on Saturday, don't tweet me about that, all right?
It's not actually my fault.
No, it'll feel like it's my fault, but don't bother contacting me.
Jack will arouse himself from his latest TV watching of Strictly Come Dancing recordings, which is then putting up on Instagram, not one of his Instagram accounts, but the other one, to tell James that he was wrong. I hope the whole thing comes crashing down to a mad game of end-to-end stuff, because I believe Spurs are the players to win that game.
But I just don't think that's what they'll try and do. No. It's going to be a really interesting clash of styles, in the sense that the two teams are trying to play a completely different game. It's not like the Pochettino era where Tottenham would be aggressive and try and be on the front foot. You know, Tottenham don't want the ball. Like they barely want the ball in any game we've seen them play this season, especially in this game. They're going to have about 25% possession. They're going to be camped on the edge of the box. They're going to let Arsenal have the ball. They're going to try and break. So, like, we shouldn't expect Tottenham to come out and play aggressively and get the ball, because they won't.
Generally, what I would say is like it actually does suit this Spurs team for any match they're in to be a match of very few chances, because, you know, as we've seen from all of the bleating about XG in the last couple of weeks, Spurs are overperforming on XG again, but they're overperforming on XG because they've got Son and Kane who consistently score way over XG. So, if it's a game of very, very few chances, Arsenal, I would say, are one of those teams that, I mean, I'm not looking at their XG as we speak. It might be that they're performing very well on that now. But generally, I think they're one of those teams that don't perform particularly brilliantly, but create a lot of chances in general. So I would say if it was a game, a tight, cagey game of few chances, then that might suit Spurs more than Arsenal, maybe. I'm not sure I'd historically say that was the case, but maybe with a dynamic as it is at the moment, I would say possibly it would be.
Well, I'll put my neck out here. Despite nearly 100 goes at this podcast now, I still haven't learned my lesson not to stick my neck out and say, I think if the game is played on the edge of Spurs' penalty area, Spurs will lose. They've got to find a way for that not to be the case. And I know the idea is you draw Arsenal on, then you spring past them. But Arsenal got too many good players at the moment. In Sacco, I didn't even mention him when I was talking about Odegaard and Martinelli and Gabriel Jesus. Sacco has got, when he's not playing left wing back in some ridiculous system, I think he's got the second most assists in the Premier League this season, of midfield players, certainly. You know, they've got talent coming out of their eyeballs over there at the moment. And if we stand there and wait for them to somehow punch themselves out, like Muhammad Ali against George Foreman all those years ago, I think we might be the famous two goals down before we're forced to make some kind of change. I hope I'm wrong.
I think you are wrong in the sense
Well,
that...
Well, actually, you can't possibly know that until after the actual football match.
No. I mean, just in the sense that Tottenham are going to play how you don't want them to play.
Yes, they are.
Like, there's no... I think the most interesting player for me going to this game is Son, because the way that Tottenham are going to play is so dependent on Son can, you know, someone hitting the ball over the top and Son turns it into a goal in a way which we've seen him do quite a lot in the past, but not this season until the Leicester game. Now, if he can play like he did against Leicester, I think Tottenham have got a really good chance because he requires such a tiny little window to turn it into a goal.
But Jack, he did all that when Spurs were playing seven up front.
Well, he also did it against a much worse
Spurs
team.
Spurs got stuck into a Leicester team in exactly the way that I'm suggesting, and he looked great in Son because he got a lot of possession around the edge of his box. I mean, a frightening stat someone put up on the internet. So they're not necessarily to be trusted. So far, according to Opta, so far this season, of non-defenders, the most successful player dribbling with the ball in the Premier League is Martin Odegaard. The most unsuccessful is Son Heung-min. With less than 10% success rate. But we all know he goes through these phases and he might turn it around against Arsenal and dribble past six of their players and slap one in from 35 yards. I stand to be corrected on Monday, Jack, but if it's off the back of a Spurs victory, I shall enjoy it very much indeed. James, you're waving your hand at me there.
Just to loop back around to Arsenal's XG.
Yes.
According to the guys at understat.com, one of my favourite XG websites, where it's where I buy a lot of my XG, they are overperforming this season by 2.83 goals on XG. So,
and what does that mean?
Spurs are overperforming by 5.5. So they're overperforming by not by as much as Spurs. So my point broadly stands.
Which of the several excellent points that you made is this backing up?
It's better for it to be a tighter game for Spurs in this instance because Spurs are more clinical.
Right, now. Yeah. And I'm going to ask...
Pure suffer ball.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have to suffer over your Saturday lunch, Danny.
Would you settle for a draw, James?
Yeah. That's good. I mean, I draw away to the team top of the league a quarter of the way-ish into the season. I don't really think you can see that as a bad result, can you? I mean, circumstances notwithstanding, obviously we don't know the way the game is going to play out. If they're 2-0 up and playing against seven men or whatever, then that would be bad. But broadly speaking, shorn of context, I would say yes.
No, of course not. I'll go further. I'd settle for two draws against Arsenal this season because that's just the way my life works
rubbish.
Out.
Rubbish.
No. All right. You don't have to put up
better
with them.
To have a defeat and a better to have a defeat and a win than that.
Points wise, yeah, but what about your heart, your soul, your mentality?
That's long gone. That's gone.
Okay.
Forget that.
All right. We were going to talk about set pieces, but I think we talked about enough things up to now. If Spurs win or lose this game off back of a set piece, remind me on Monday we didn't talk about the importance of set pieces in this game. I'm going to do the outro now, which I normally do, but don't go away, because after that, there's a secret track like there used to be on it on CDs. So we've done all we can to preview the game. My nerves are jangling. If you're not already an Athletic subscriber, remember you can sign up to read all of the brilliant Spurs coverage this season, as well as everything else that's on the site. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod and sign in right now, and you can get the first 6 months for just £1 per month. I want to thank Jack and I want to thank James for their contributions. I want to thank all of you for listening. We'll be back again on Monday. But just before we leave you, we thought we'd bring you an extended clip from the Athletic Football Tactics podcast, who themselves have previewed the derby this week. To listen to the whole episode, just search for the Athletic Football Tactics podcast wherever you get yours. Cheers for now.
An equal issue between Conte's philosophies in possession and how he wants his team to build up and issues with the personnel within the team in terms of, let's say, the centre-backs and how comfortable they are on the ball? Or is it weighted, in your opinion, more towards the players, more towards the tactical approach?
It's a bit towards the players and that they're still learning. So at the beginning of the season, when Conte was asked about the new players, he said they're still learning. The thing is, Conte depends a lot on automations in possession. So he trains actually these build-ups over and over and over again till the players actually know it by heart. So some of the players still haven't adapted. Some of the new players, I mean. Sanchez is way worse than Romero in possession. And another thing is that other teams are figuring Conte's build-up patterns out. So if we saw the game against Chelsea, so Chelsea, like in terms of Chelsea's pressing, they pressed with a 5-3-2. Havertz and Sterling were mainly like moving to press the back three of Spurs. Mount and Kante were on Bentancur and Højbjerg. And Jorginho like behind them just to cover space in case like Kane drops or Kulusevski was trying to drop. And the major thing we saw is how Reece James was man marking Son. So this way, how Spurs want to build up, you're blocking everything. So you're blocking the 3-2 build up. You're blocking Kulusevski and Son in the half spaces. So teams are slightly figuring them out in terms of how Spurs want to build up. So I think one thing Conte tried to do, and he did it before with Inter, is that instead of building up with a 3 or a 4 with one of the wing backs dropping deeper, he moves actually the center back, which is Eric Dier, up into midfield and keeps the wing backs deep. So it's actually more of a 4-3-3 build-up. I think he tried that against Leicester, not to much success, but this is something he did before with Inter, and I can see him doing it in the future when the players adapt.
You were at that game against Leicester, Michael, and it struck me that, you know, if you were to look on the Opta analyst numbers for the season, you know, what we're hearing about Spurs is build-up being a little under par. It doesn't necessarily tally with the numbers because they've had the, you know, fourth most or third equal most shots from open play, fourth for XG, but very close to Liverpool and Arsenal here, and 11 goals from open play, which is the second equal most with Arsenal. But is that game against Leicester doing a lot of heavy lifting there, do you think?
Yeah, it is. They kind of outperformed their XG in that game really as well, thanks to Son with a couple of incredible goals. And I think that game really suited the way Tottenham play, because Leicester are quite positive but quite disorganised without the ball and defensively. And I think they left space for Spurs to break into, and also allowed them to score a couple of quite easy goals from set pieces. So yeah, I think you're right. I think that game did suit them. I think there's an argument for saying that Arsenal play in a way that might suit Tottenham as well, in terms of their defend relatively high at the pitch. So yeah, they might turn out to be one of those sides who look a bit better against good opponents than they do against weaker opponents.
And do you think if Antonio Conte weren't listening to this pod, he might say some of the things that we're discussing here are a decision by him? It's basically some of the things we're discussing, some of the ways of building up, is the whole point of Conte's football, and would point at results and say, not going too badly, is it?
Yeah, I quite like it when Conte, I don't know if you noticed this, whenever he answers a question, Conte, he starts with the word but.
Yeah.
So it always sounds like he's arguing with the person, or that they've missed the point, which I think he probably would say about us. I mean, I think it's a slightly complex thing. I think it's easy to look at Tottenham and say, well, they're not playing that well this season. I think an obvious counter argument to that is, well, they're not trying to dominate games. They're not trying to look good permanently in 90 minutes. But I think Ahmed's right in the sense that they're still not playing well. They're not doing those things in terms of breaking from back to front in possession as well as they were at times last season. So, maybe he would say we are slightly missing the point, but I still think they've been a little bit underwhelming and a little fortunate at times to get the results that they have done.
The Athletic.